Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to a special edition of All of It, celebrating the NAACP Image Awards happening this Saturday. Today, we're featuring our favorite interviews with some of this year's Image Award nominees. We're looking next at the category of Outstanding Performance by an Actress. The nominees are Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, Jodie Turner-Smith for Queen and Slim, Lupita Nyong'o for Us, Naomi Harris for Black and Blue, and our next guest, Alfre Woodard, who stars in the film Clemency. Clemency opens with a state-sanctioned execution, an execution that goes horribly, horribly wrong, and the warden overseeing the tragic event, Bernadine, is there. Bernadine is always there, more than 11 times during her career. She insists that as a warden, she treats the men on death row with respect and dignity. She asks them what they would like to have for their last meal. She directs practice runs of their upcoming execution. She addresses prisoners and guards and frustrated lawyers and grieving families with the same collected, cool demeanor. But as the execution of a prisoner who maintains his innocence grows closer, we see the toll that carrying out these death sentences has taken on Bernadine's mental state. Clemency was written and directed by director Chinoye Chukwu and was executive produced and stars Alfre Woodard as Bernadine. When Clemency won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, Chinoye became the first Black woman to receive the award. Alfre Woodard and Chinoye Chukwu joined us to talk about the film in December. Let's listen. So Chinoye, not only are you a filmmaker, but you worked as an advocate on Clemency cases. How did that start for you? Why did that start for you?
So I was inspired to write and direct this film in 2011 after Troy Davis was executed in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And in 2013 is when I decided I was going to go for it. And so I spent almost a year doing secondary research where I interviewed a lot of wardens and chaplains and people who were incarcerated and read a lot of books. But I was living in New York City at the time. And I through that research, I realized that if I was really going to get into the DNA of the story, if I was really going to tell this story as authentically and realistically as possible, then I need to give of myself to the very community that I was representing. I relocated to a death penalty state, and I sent a cold email to a nonprofit legal organization that was representing incarcerated women specifically, and they needed help with a current clemency case for a woman named Tyra Patterson. Mm-hmm. And so I literally just sent a cold email and I said, listen, you don't know me, but here's my website info and I want to work for you for free and I'll do whatever you need. I just want to help. They didn't believe me, but they're like, okay. And so they said, all right, come on down. And I moved to Ohio, and that was the first clemency case that I worked on. And I then subsequently volunteered for 13 other clemency cases and really developed a passion for advocating for the humanities of people who are incarcerated.
When you first went out there as a creative person and a filmmaker, what kind of information were you looking for? I know it sort of shifted over into advocacy as you got involved, but initially, what were you looking for?
A couple things. I had some logistical questions because I knew nothing about the way capital punishment works on like a tangible level. So I was looking for how do executions actually literally take place? What is the literal logistical process and the bureaucratic process? What are the legal processes as well? But then I was also interested in soaking in atmosphere. So there was one point where I was spending like 40, 50 hours a week in the prison, teaching in the women's prison. And I would just observe. I would pay attention to the sounds and the quiet. I would pay attention to the mundaneness of the space. I would pay attention to the way people walk, the way people carry themselves, the language that lawyers use and when they refer to someone who is their client, the language that that wardens use. And I would just observe. And so I could understand how it feels to be in the space. So I was taking note on how to replicate that on screen.
It's really interesting when you do go into a prison, because I've done some reporting in prisons, just that the moment from the inside, from outside to inside, you've been as well as Afri in your research.
Yes.
There is something that just physically changes in you, even though you know you can leave.
Yes.
What is that, do you think, Alfre? What did you feel?
I think we feel captivity. we're animals, and we haven't lived in the wild, but all of those instincts are still there. Mm-hmm. And when you walk in, and it might look like, you know, it's not a big draconian castle the way you might imagine with bars. It looks like a minor junior college with high wires around and so many gates, and they just keep locking as you go, and your breath shortens.
That's part of the opening scene of the film. I don't want to give too much away. But after I watched it, I watched the last scene and then the first scene again. And it's this really interesting bookend, even down to what you're wearing. We'll just say that. We won't get too many spoilers. What was the catalyst that actually got this off the ground and into production?
I mean, so I wrote the first draft in January 2014. And we got the financing at the end of 2017. And we ended up getting financing from Ace Pictures, mm-hmm. who, and this was their first film through their production company. And they got behind us, and they're based in Malaysia, and they really wanted to tell a powerful story with the woman at the center.
My guests are Chinua Achukwu, director and writer of Clemency, as well as Alfre Woodard, who is starring in the film. Did you always know it was going to be a female warden?
Yes.
Why?
Why not? I mean, it really didn't go beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think a lot of, I just thought of her in my likeness, and most of the wardens that I met and worked around were Black women. Mm-hmm. So it just, why not?
When you were developing Bernadine, how does she see her job?
Well, the women that we met with, when Chinoy took me to Ohio, they were women who had come to their positions up through the ranks, but they'd come to it from mental health profession and from social work. And so that gave me something to, I could understand that, feel that. It gave me a place to start with the way that person carries themselves, the way they deal with other people. And then I met these women, and I felt everything's going to be okay when I was with them constantly. They had a balance. They were organized. And they, as they talked to their staff, as they talked to incarcerated people, it didn't change. They just had that kind of, oh, yeah, they can be my commander. Mm-hmm. And so That was the thing that I held on to most. When it came time to work, really I had all of these models in my head of how this, you know, this warden would be and how she operated. The thing is, the protocol is there in a comfortable way, and the protocol really carries a lot of compassion in it at the same time. So the approach for me, the way of dealing with people that seems very succinct and following the rules are there for protection and for not only for the people that are incarcerated, but the incarcerators are also, mm-hmm. everybody is in prison together. And so you need that balance there to make sure that everything stays safe. And she constantly talks about making sure that the men have their dignity from the way that they spend their time all the way through to the way that you take them out.
So Chinoye, this film opens up with this execution that goes horribly wrong. And we are there in the room as the viewer, and you make us stay there in the room as the viewer seeing the gas for breath and the blood pooling and the execution just going wrong. Why did you want for the viewer not to have an escape? We do not have an escape from this scene.
Because I wanted viewers to, I didn't want it to be easy. I wanted this to stick. I wanted viewers to fully understand on a visceral level what is at stake in the story, in our society, I think one of the things that was my artistic intention by not having a lot of music and by just really focusing on the kind of industrial realness of the space is that the horror is to convey that the horror is in the mundaneness. The horror isn't through an elaborate film score. The horror isn't through quick cuts and rapid editing. But the horror is in the everydayness of these acts and the utter unsentimentality of these acts. And I think that that opening scene really conveys that.
And to your point, there's a lot of space. There's a lot in the script where there's silence. You have to do your job, Alfre, without words in many ways. For you as an actor, when you see that in a script, how do you approach it?
Well, it excites me. I get happy because I understand, and most actors understand, we're recreating human actions. That's what a drama is. And life happens between the lines. It doesn't happen on the lines, but most filming happens on the lines, the choice of cuts. And so you understand when that's there, if there's air, that filmmaker already knows the language, the real communication language.
When you were filming these scenes, were they as emotionally draining to film as to watch for you as an actor? Or is it just your job and this is what you do?
Well, yeah, it's your job, what you do. It's like training. I used to be athletic before I discovered I was an artist, so I always give sort of sports analogies. But it's training. Once you train and you work those muscles, whether they're physical, vocal, emotional, spiritual, you want to be put into the game. Mm-hmm. And, but I will say the toughest part for me, and as soon as I start to say it, I start to water up. The toughest part was taking that tour and meeting people and experiencing going in and out and understanding as I watched women, young women, and as I watched men walk around on the lines, I saw abandoned children. I saw young people that didn't have access and education. Mm-hmm. I saw the moment that an interruption with respect, with classes, with process that gave them a chance to express everything that was happening to them could have been avoided. And talking to condemned men and knowing the weight that the warden and the deputies, the majors carried on their souls, it took me a month to stop spontaneously weeping. So shooting it, I just had to keep myself from charging to the finish line and just keep the breath going, play the music with the musical signs. I just mix metaphors with music and act with less of them, but that's what an actor does.
Was there a therapist on set?
There was, yes.
What went into that decision?
Well, that was a decision that my producer Bronwyn and I talked about during the days that we shot the execution scenes. So, because we knew that those would probably be some of the most emotionally taxing days, and we just wanted to let people on set, the cast and crew, know that we are being intentional about caring for your well-being.
And we actually, while we were just setting up the execution scenes, we actually lost a couple of background workers.
They were too triggered,
actors.
And so they decided to walk away.
When you were writing Bernadine's character, Chinoye, where is she in her life? What's going on? Because we meet her that day.
I saw when we begin the script, she's on the cusp. We start when she's at a tipping point emotionally in relation to her job and her kind of emotional psychological relationship to her job. And so she and the opening moments of the film kind of start to push her closer and closer towards that edge until as the story progresses, so does her arc. And I see her, I see the story entering with her already in a moment of questioning and thinking about possibilities beyond her present space.
And there's a looming execution of a man who is maintaining his innocence. Why did you choose to have there be a question about his innocence as opposed to him we knowing maybe he committed this crime?
Well, I didn't want audiences' ability to see or feel his humanity mm-hmm. to be contingent upon his innocence or guilt. You know, I personally believe that one of the ways that we're going to kind of move forward in conversations and advocacy around incarceration mm-hmm. and the prison industrial complex is that if we don't reserve reform for those who we know are innocent, that we have to extend humanities and justice and mercy for those who are definitively guilty and for those that we don't know whether or not they're guilty or innocent.
Why is she having difficulty in her marriage, just even having her husband touch her?
Well, I think she doesn't have a problem with him touching her. The moments that sometimes, you know, you get, when you get in a state and you're trying to mm-hmm. to understand yourself, communicate, and the worst thing somebody can do is touch you. You say, okay, just you can't touch me right now. Doesn't mean that. She and Jonathan, you know, they're at a point in their life. They're grown-ups. They have a marriage. They're mm-hmm. those people that didn't go, you know what, this isn't working, I'm leaving, or I don't want to do the work, so I'm going to go find somebody else that won't question me for a while. They stay the course. And Jonathan is having his own mm-hmm. Sort of this moment of reckoning. And we see him teaching Invisible Man in his classroom. And the thing is, he wants to leave earlier than they said they were going to leave. And she is having trouble, you know, at jobs. Anyway, mm-hmm. What I love about it is that's how people who love each other, who know each other, have stayed together. So there's a betrayal that she feels when Jonathan wants her to walk away. And that's, you only feel betrayed if somebody you've been close to. And so she's got that on top of, you know, her whether she's going to answer one day on her soul for the things that she's done. And, but it's, you definitely feel the love, but you definitely see how people struggle and how mm-hmm. they work. And you keep trying to tell each other how you feel. But that's the thing when Marty says, we just all want to be, you know, seen and heard. We want to be understood. And that's impossible, no matter how close you get to another person. You just won't understand each other. But you got to love each other anyway.
Chinyoye, mm-hmm. what are some resources for people who have they seen the film and they want to do something or they want to be involved or they want to learn more?
Well, a couple things. The Appeal has a great website. I think it's theappeal.org or it's theappeal.com, but they have a great website of articles and information about different aspects of the criminal legal system, state by state. And they also explore specific state and local issues that pertain to the criminal legal system, because that's where the majority of people are incarcerated. And they also provide some great advocacy resources for people who want to get involved. I would also go on the ACLU website, and you can go state by state to know how you can get involved with regards to the capital punishment and the criminal legal system. But I also would urge people to do some quick Google searches about to know who the prosecutors are and the judges and the sheriffs and the coroners. And
these are the people. People can vote for.
People can vote for these people.
I hear what you
and
say.
And it's not just about the federal election, but it's about these local kind of smaller elections, because those are the people who most directly impact incarceration.
That was my conversation with Chinyoye Chukwu and Alfre Woodard about their film, Clemency. Alfre Woodard is nominated for an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Actress in a Film. She is also going to be on WNYC tonight. WNYC is celebrating Black History Month with special presentations. And tonight you can hear Can Do, Stories of Black Visionaries, Seekers, and Entrepreneurs, hosted by Alfre Woodard. The hour features stories of African-American pioneers. That is coming up at 8 on WNYC. And find all our Black History Month specials at wnyc.org/Black History Month.